Hello, it is November 18th, 2013. This is episode 3.5 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on sports on Earth. Today is Mickey Mouse Day. Someday, Donald is going to punch that smug rodent right in the goddamn snout. Here in Athens, though, it is merely Monday. I'm Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. We start off a new week with a man I've been a big fan of for a very long time, and I've been very lucky to get to correspond with, and pretty much admire him for a very long time, is Bill Schecht. He's a writer for a long time writer for Late Show with David Letterman, and author of 5 books, including the upcoming Shrink Thyself, which we will be talking about later. But first off, I'm just going to ask Bill a bunch of fanboy questions. Bill, thanks for coming on with me.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. And I've, I've been a big admirer of yours for a long time, and I wouldn't be saying that unless I was incredibly superficial and sycophantic.
Of course. And we weren't recording. Like, listen, right before we came on, you were like, okay, you did the big lead. Was the big lead? Were you the big lead guy? And I was like, no, I'm not the big lead guy. I'm not.
Well, you know that's not true, and you know that I'm responsible for your father sitting in the big chair at the Ed Sullivan Theater, and your mother was in the chair, and your father was the guest.
Yes,
right. And we took a picture of them. Yeah, that was great.
That was my mother's round number birthday. We'll just say that.
Right.
We'll just say that.
Right.
It was a round number with a 0 or a 5 at the end of it. And you were very gracious. I have to say, I think because it was funny because what you had told me to do was to, when I got into the show, to kind of look for you while you were on the stage while preparing, and just so you'd be able to nod to be able to find me after the show, because we had not.
Right.
And it was funny because I don't think my parents have ever been more proud of me. Because
I doubt that, but go on.
No, I mean they just got my name like a couple of weeks ago. So they saw like one of the guys that had just been talking to Dave, like, looked up and saw me and waved, and they were just like,
yeah.
Oh, wow, so I guess this is the guy Will owes money to or had some sort of bad drug deal with. So, yeah, that was a cool thing. Because, you know, and you and I have talked about this. This is going to kind of lead us into it a little bit. You know, one of the things I love, one of the many things I love about my parents is, you know, for years, it's been, for those of us that have been following late night people for a long time, there's always been a sense that, like, okay, there's Leno people and there's Letterman people. And
right.
And there are way too many, frankly, of people in our dopey small town that people would think that my parents might be Leno people. And they love Dave and have loved Dave forever. Like, have loved Dave since they were frankly too probably a little bit they're not those people that started loving Dave in college. They loved Dave
right.
while they were like dealing with screaming children running around. Like they
right.
Dave is their hero. So to be able to do that was pretty much the best birthday thing. So thank you for that. And now I want to actually
Great. That was a great day.
It was really fun. And also I discovered Black Joe and the Honey Bears. It was a band that played. And they were great. And now I have all their albums, so thank you for.
Well, that's great, and I like to think that we do some things consistently well at the show, and one of them is putting on music that you know hasn't been on other shows or has yet to be on television, and you know it's one of the great traits of the show, and it's something that Dave, you know, always insists on. So that's great.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm in Athens, Georgia, and of course the Drive-By Truckers are here, and the Drive-By Truckers famously got one of the few Dave asking for an encore. It's one of the few.
Oh my God! Well, sure. I mean, that's happened about. I've been in the show 22 years, and I think it's happened about, I don't know, 4 times or whenever, you know, and it just doesn't happen. And of course, whenever he asks for an encore, it's one of those nights where the show has already gone long,
right.
And will have to be a minute or two will have to be edited anyway. And invariably, that's one of those nights. You know, can we get one more? You know,
that is something that, as a big fan of that band. And of course, a big fan of Dave. I was like, "Oh well, it's like discovering like when a friend of yours from college and a friend of yours you met abroad met each other and are best friends."
I give him a lot of credit because my interest in music is a bit narrow. I like what I like, and I play what I play, and he has really stayed with it. I mean, I'm 56, and he's 66, and there's a load in that's played every day when he comes up to, and we prepare for the show, and he goes in the dressing room and the makeup room, and when I tell you, I look at those 25 songs, I might know one, and he knows all of them. Yeah. You know, so he, I don't know what chip he had installed to enable him to do that, but I don't have that chip, I'll tell you right now.
Oh, I mean, I'm still, like, honestly, most of the music I listened to came out in 1994. Like, I'm just, that happened to be, like, way too young. Like, I'm still stuck
you're about 30 years ahead of me, you know. I mean, I've had a band for the last 4 years. We play nothing after 1967, so that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk. I'm curious about the stage of the show in a lot of ways. That, like, you know, you guys. First off, I want to ask. I feel like this is maybe a good way to get into this.
Yeah.
In April 2004, as a veteran of these 2014, excuse me, as a veteran of these wars, have seen this happen so much. Is Leno really gonna leave?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a great question, and that's a great question for Jay.
Jay Leno,
will he leave? Will he go quietly? I mean, we've kind of played this out twice. I have to believe that this time it will be different, just because he's played it a little differently, Jay, and you know, because if he wasn't going to leave, he would do something like, you know, he'd fake his own death and then reemerge, you know, right, something. Yeah.
He's going to reemerge as Andy Kaufman's daughter. He will show up as Andy Kaufman's daughter at a show, yes. I'm curious, because Dave just re-upped again. Like, my biggest fear, I fear this all the time, is that Dave's going to quit. Is Dave ever going to quit? He's never going to quit, right?
These are questions for him. My only hope is that he becomes the first guy, and really the first guy, because that gets to leave when he wants to leave. That's my only hope, because because he would be the first guy that got to leave when he wanted to leave. I hope that that's how it shakes out. I don't know when it shakes out, but that's my fondest wish for him, because he would be the first.
Yeah.
He would be the first.
Is it still, do you, I mean, you see him every day and you work on the show every day. Is it, I you know, it's a job, of course. So, but like, is it still as fun? Like, do you still get that kind of, compare your never minding that we're all older, describe your energy level maybe from in 1981 and then 2001 and then and now, like, energy level, excitement about the show. Does the show still have that kick when you come in and when you come in and start putting the show together?
Absolutely, because just in and of itself, I've always likened the show to, and I started out as a newspaper writer, I started out as a sports writer. I liken the show to working for a newspaper, a weekly magazine, and a monthly magazine. And you'll understand this, because there's the energy of having to get the paper out every day. And then when the paper's out, you go back to your desk and you do this. You go, and then you go, okay, now tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right? And you start again on tomorrow. It's like a weekly magazine where there is some stuff that we, just because of booking the guests, that you have to plan a week in advance, like, you know, Bruce Willis is on next week, so we have to work on a, you know, something wacky for him. And then it's like working on a monthly magazine, because there are some stuff like the prop pieces or pieces that require us to close 53rd Street, where you got to get the permits like 3 months in advance, or you got to get the props together. So the show, the energy that the show generates to put itself out, that's the thing that keeps going, and that can't change just because we're still on 5 days a week. And and so I think that, and I also, I try not to think of what is this like compared to 10 years ago or 20? I mean, the show goes through different periods in terms of sensibility, but it's still the same in the sense that whatever you do in the morning or in the early afternoon at 4:30 or in the old days at 5:30, you know, you got to start the show and you got to do the show, you know, warts and all. And there's plenty of warts. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that still likes the warts because when I was at NBC, you know, the show, the great thing about the show was, and I can't remember who coined this phrase, it was a celebration of failure. I mean, you wanted a bit to do well, but if a bit fell apart, you knew Dave was going to do something in the moment. And I've said this many, many times, and of course I'd like to say nothing but original things to you because of who you are.
Everything is for me. I don't want anything. Don't even use like adjectives you've used before.
But I've said, you know, look, we write some funny stuff, we write some stuff that's okay, and we write some stuff that's lame. But night after night, the funniest moments on the show are Dave reacting in the moment, and that's nothing that anybody could write. And so, you know, that's what it is. And so, in many ways, this is very corny. I mean, it does feel very new. It feels like the blink of an eye. And in many ways, it feels like I can't believe, you know, yet 22 years, and you know, we've all gotten older. I mean, I've been there 22 years, and there's at least 10 staffers that have been there longer than I have. There's one other writer, Steve Young. He started a year before I did, so he's been there a little longer than I have. But you know, we're all there, and we've all lived through it. I mean, I hope I answered that question.
Oh yeah, well no, that was great, and that's what I mean. Is that like, and I'm curious, does he like, you know, I've talked about this many times in my life that like, you know, Letterman is like, Letterman's my guy. Like Letterman is like, I know that you know, nightly talk shows have like taken a lot of different forms, and you know, there've been a lot of changes, and now there's Stephen Colbert,
right,
and then there's and so on. And I actually really liked Totally Biased, which is the show that FXX just canceled. I just thought that was a good show.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that was a good
show.
And so like, I feel like there's a lot of different shows out there, but Dave is like, to me, Dave is still, it's funny, every once in a while, like a Dave clip will like, something like a particularly newsworthy moment will happen from Dave, and you'll see people like Vulture be like, wow, Letterman still got it. I'm like, he's been doing that every night. Like, it's always strange for me when people are like, wow, Letterman, he's got his groove back. Like, no, the groove is always there.
I appreciate that. And you know, you're talking to the choir, and, it's just one of those things where, you know, anytime I hear anybody say that, it's just clear that they haven't been watching the show, or that, you know, and that's fine. There's a lot of, you know, who's the guy that you, oh boy, he used to do, I think it was John Rigi, who became a really fine writer, but when he was a comic, he used to do a bit about, he says, you know how when you open up a little to someone, and then they open up a lot to you. Like you say something to someone like, you know, I used to watch MASH every night. Now I don't watch it anymore. And your friend says, I think I'm gay. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, the show has been on since 1982. It's been on for 31 years. So you cannot expect anybody, you know, to lock in for that kind of time other than Dave. So, you know, so people naturally assume that when they stop watching it, that the fact that they're no longer watching it means that it's no longer relevant. And it's not true. And there's a lot more choices. And, but you watch any of these shows on any given night and somebody is doing something that the old show was the first to do. And that's just a fact. And, you know, he never gets enough credit for that.
And, you know, one of the strange things about watching a show like yours on a regular basis is, you know, I feel like, honestly, I've never met Letterman. I've never had any interaction with him. And I feel like I know him. Like, I know I don't. Like, I know I know TV Dave.
Right. But let me tell you why that is. Because he's the only guy in the history of the medium whose mood has been chronicled on television. Now, take somebody, example like Roseanne. Nobody crazier than Roseanne. I mean, she's been a guest of the state many times. But you never watch an old episode of Roseanne and think, oh, this is when she was having a fight with the network.
Right,
you know,
right.
You never watch her, you know, do a lot. But Dave, he comes out, and in addition to being, you know, so wickedly fast and funny, he also gives you a little insight into what may be going on with him. And that's why, that's the thing that's so compelling about him. And, you know, look, Jay, look, I started as a comic in 1980. And, you know, no better club comic than Jay.
Yeah.
No better club. And everybody, and every comic will tell you that. And but the difference between Jay and Dave is, you know, a really great comic who got a great gig and, you know, a great broadcaster who a really funny broadcaster who got a good gig. That's the difference. You know, that's the difference.
So,
and
to me, that's interesting. I'm curious, you know, someone that knows him well, is that kind of the fact that you get so much of him, even in small ways on the show? Like, I'm assuming that would have to contribute to him being kind of so famously private off air.
I think so. I just think that he's, sometimes I don't understand what, you know, he makes very smart decisions, and they're very simple decisions. Like, I'm not going to go out every night, you know,
right.
And I don't understand why other people
right.
don't make those same decisions
right.
or
he's not
I'm going to,
for not doing that.
Yeah, you're right. I'm going to share a lot of my wealth with things that are important to me, but I'm not going to put my name on anything because that's not what it's about. And you would think that, you know, more people, we would think that other people, you know, to me, these are just values. But he's, the reason why, I mean, I love the show and I love my job, and he's been a very good friend to me. But it's just fascinating, you know, to be around. And the thing about writing for television, I've written on a lot of shows, is that if you're a television writer, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're writing for somebody who's not as talented as you, but has the right look or has the right appeal or has the right accessibility. So you're writing for someone that is just not as talented as you. But Dave is one of those people where you're aspiring to when you write for him, you aspire to him, to his level, because he's always going to be the best writer on the show. You know, that's the thing. You know, give it up.
Oh, I feel like that would do things to my ego sometimes. To realize, like, no matter what, like, it always reminds me. Like, I remember when I read Obama's Dreams of My Father when it first came out,
right.
I was like, oh, so he can do all this other stuff, and he's a better writer than I am. Thanks.
Right, okay, right. I know exactly what you're talking about. Because here's the thing, and my wife is a comic. We met at Catch a Rising Star, and we talk about there's different levels of funny. And the biggest level of funny is get out of the business funny. When you see a guy who's so funny, you have to get out of the business. You have no choice but to get out of the business. It's like, you know, Philip Roth is my hero, and I'm embarrassed that he and I are both called authors. And there's another friend of mine, Ron Zimmerman, who was a comic and became a writer and producer, and he used to do a great joke in his act. You'll love this. And the joke was that Robert De Niro shot and killed Anson Williams at a Hollywood party when Anson Williams said, oh, you're an actor just like me. You know, and it's the same thing. But you have to get over that, because there's room for everybody. And in terms of the ego thing, you know, you have to accept this very early on, that if you write 50 jokes in a day, you know, and he takes 10, that's a good day. And if he takes 0, it's not a good day, but you're still a writer because you wrote 50 jokes. So that's the thing at the end of the day.
So, you know. Now, and my last question on David, I want to get more specifically into you. Does he, as someone that it feels like, you know, when I'm watching the shows regularly, I do, it does feel like people talk about like different stages in his career and different ways that he's been, you know, like after the health issues, he was a certain way. And I think after and to me, after his kid was born, seems like a very clear delineation. Where is he now? Like, do you feel like is he happy when he comes into work? Is there an excitement level that comes in now? Where would you classify his stage now?
I mean, I would, you know, I don't, you know, I don't know because I'm still 48 credits short of my degree as a therapist. But the thing is that so let's just look at it this way. Let's just look at it, forget Dave. Let's just look at it in 1982, when the show came on the air, the late night came on the air, he was 34. And now he's 66. So just look at, just plug anybody into that.
Yeah.
The difference between 34 and 66. So I just think that I think in many ways, you know, I think you can't help but you know, look back on what your legacy is. I think I know he still likes doing the show because I see the energy. I mean, listen, I had my hip replaced 5 years ago, and I'll just tell you this. The dressing room, his dressing room was on the second floor of the Ed Sullivan Theater building. And it's a big, staircase. And I'm telling you, he runs up those stairs to the second floor. I see him every day run up those stairs, and forget who he is and forget that, you know, it's his show and forget all of that. I'm 10 years younger than him. I can't do that. And with a new hip, I can't do that. So that's, you know, that's where he is. He's still running up the stairs, you know? So I think that's, I mean, that says everything.
That's gotta be a weird thing that in 2 years, he will have had a television show longer than he hasn't.
Right. That's like when you stop drinking and you hit that, you know, wait a minute, I've not drank longer than I drank for. Yeah. It's this, yeah. And I think that it's, you know, it's one of those, you know, if you, boy, here's an old movie. If you watch The Right Stuff and you just see, you know, the first Chuck Yeager flight in it and the last, and how much things have changed, but the guy is still the same guy, and he's still kind of a unique guy, but he's accessible. It's sort of like that. I mean, when I started the show, we were all writing on typewriter. I mean, I don't want to, you know, so, you know, the wheel had just been invented. I mean, but yet it's the same, but yet, you know, everything has changed except the guy that comes out at the beginning of the show. You know, that's the thing that's so, it's amazing. It really is amazing to see. And there's, like I said, there's a lot of us that have been there for a while. And, you know, the people there, I mean, they're just amazing people. They're amazing people. I've had to leave a couple of times to finish up books. And, you know, I always come back because of the people, you know.
You know, it's funny. Like, I always enjoy, you know, you and from 2002 to 2005, you wrote the Sports Illustrated column, The Show, I was a big fan. In fact, we actually at the time we had that 2005 was when the Black Table, which is we were doing the Black Table. It was a site that your dad's been launched, but it was a year where we were doing the site, the Black Table, and we actually got a writer from the Daily Show to write a weekly column for us, simply because we thought, wow, okay, maybe this will make us look more like the Letterman Show if we have
right.
And so did you enjoy it? Like, do you miss that column? Or would you do?
Oh my God, yeah, I miss it. I miss it a lot. And I'll tell you, I started it at ESPN Magazine. I replaced Tony Kornheiser, and they brought me in and they said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, I always want to do a column with just topical jokes about sports. And they said, but it's 800 words. That's 30 jokes. I said, well, I write 50 a day. I said, you know, your magazine comes out every 2 weeks, and they said, well, we don't think you can. I said, well, watch me. And I said, and I'll do it. And I did it there for 2 years, and then I was hired away, and by Sports Illustrated, which is a huge thrill for me because I really blew a chance to work there shortly after I got out of college. I really, you know, pissed away an opportunity there. So to be invited back. And, you know, my uncle was a very famous sports writer. My uncle was Herbert Warren Wynn, the dean of American Golf Writers, who coined the phrase Amen Corner. He wrote for The New Yorker for years, wrote for Sports Illustrated when in its inception. So I loved it because, again, it was the perfect marriage of all my careers as a sports writer, as a comedian, and as a monologue writer for Dave. So... And I loved it. It was intense. It was I would love instead to tell you the story about how I was let go.
Oh, please do.
Because
please do.
It's much more entertaining.
All right,
than
So I
did the gig for 3 years. I was and I got a deal to have a collection done of my columns, and. And Sports Illustrated, of course, swooped in, took half of my advance. So I put together and I write a bunch of news. And you've done this, so now it's a month before the collection's going to come out. So I call Terry McDonnell, who was the editor of Sports Illustrated, and a guy I talked to twice a year, whether I needed to or not. So I'm calling him just to tell him, listen. For the next 4 weeks, at the end of my column, I'm just going to promo the collection that's coming out, being that you and I are partners in this. So that's all. I just needed his, and I knew he would say fine. So I call him. He's not available. And so now, 10 minutes later, he calls back, and he says to me, this is so weird. I was just going to call you. So I said to him, okay, you go first. He said, look, I know the timing's bad, but we're letting you go. So I'm trying, and he keeps talking, and I'm trying to catch my breath, right? And I say to him, finally catch my breath. I say, Terry, I got to tell you, I never saw this coming. I'm the second most read thing in the magazine behind Rick Riley, and I'm the most picked up thing in the magazine, which, you know, newspapers would pick up my jokes, and it's thousands of dollars of free advertising a week, and I'm the second most. So I'm telling you, I never saw this coming. And he said to me, I'll never forget this, he said to me, hey, life is wide. Now, I'll give you a second. Life is wide. That's what he says to me. To this day, I have no idea what that means. But that's what he said to me, hey, life is wide. And that was it. And as it turned out, you know, you can't help but take this thing desperately personally. But what happened was is that I was the first guy to go in, you know, a series of big cost-cutting measures. You know, they let Steve Rushen go, you know, a little while later, and Jack McGrath, you know, they left, you know, and that's all it was. It was just money. And but I miss it. I had a lot of fun with it, and I look very fondly back upon, you know, and it was, you know, and I had it. I had it for 3 years, and it was great. I don't think that it's a kind of column that you could do now because of Twitter, because people are, you know, just throwing out jokes left and right and in the moment on Twitter. So I don't think it would be, I don't think it's, and I was, and I think that as I look back at 2005, I think that things were, I think that it was, you know, even though I was trying to write the jokes that nobody else was coming up with, I think that it was beginning to lose its relevance given the emergence of other media.
And it's funny now because, like, the idea of a weekly sports monologue, by the time you finished with the jokes, because I'm assuming you would file your column on what, Sundays?
Right, correct.
Yeah, it would be out on Thursday. By that time, everyone would be like, we have literally forgotten all of these things happened.
Right, that's right, that's right, that's right. And I'm sure that, I mean, you look at what you did at Deadspin, and now, you know, however many years later, and, you know, is this the kind of thing, you know, even, is even Deadspin, you know, a little behind it in terms of the immediacy of getting the joke out or whatever. It's just everything is
yeah, like a blog post is like this weirdly clunky construction now. It's like, wait,
right, exactly.
This is not 8 characters and 4 hashtags in a little box. Right. Yeah.
I'm telling you, just to get back to Dave for a second, when I got the job and I said to him, do you have any suggestions for me? This is the only note he ever gave me. He said, never write a joke longer than 4 lines. I don't care how good it is. It won't fit on a cue card, you know, which was the only note. Now, of course, his jokes have gotten so much shorter over the years. You know, if we go over half a cue card, he's like, we got to cut some words. So, you know, everybody is like that.
Yeah, so, wow, that's crazy. Yeah. Like, it's, I guess, you know, I'm assuming that if Dave ever leaves, it will be replaced by a show of cat GIFs and funny BuzzFeed fruit or something.
I have 2 reactions to that. My first reaction is, well, I don't know. And the second is, hey.
Hey, listen, okay, Iron, who's with me? Okay, and the last thing I want to talk to you about, you, of course, you are a writer outside just the show, and you have written several books. And I love it because, like, now you're becoming, like, pretty prolific these days. I feel like it feels like Everything Hurts just came out, and you've got a book coming out in spring, correct?
Well, yes, I do. It's called Shrink Thyself, and you're awfully nice to say that, because Everything Hurts came out in 2009, and I finished writing Shrink Thyself in 2011, and nobody told me while I was writing it that the publishing industry had closed and left the country, and it took me 2 years to sell the manuscript, because I mean, you know, and I don't have to tell you, fiction, and yeah. I mean, you know, if I hear the phrase sales track one more time, you know, I'm not a guy that, you know, my novels, you know, they'll make you your money back, but you know, you're not going to add a wing on to the corporate headquarters, and you know, they want you know, they want 50 Shades of Regis. You know, they want something. You know, they want, you know, where, you know, where everybody,
that?
Yeah, everybody. So, but I finally found a nice house out in LA, and they're, you know, really behind it. And I think it's, I think it's the best thing I've done, and I'm really pleased. And you know, writing novels, and, you know, when you write the long form, you know, compared to magazine work or compared to the stuff you did at Deadspin, you know, everything really slows down, and it's a very different pace. You use a completely different set of muscles, and, you know, other than the quick twitch wise guy muscles that we normally use, you know, everything slows down. So I appreciate it. It's a great counterweight to working at the show.
Well, I will have that book. If you'll let me, when you go on the promotional tour, I'd love to have you on again. We'll talk about it some more.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great.
And we will not mention Dave once on that show. That show will just be about your book. In fact,
this is the deal, and this is nothing new. You know, the 2 things that happen to me when I go out on book tours is that, you know, two things happen. I'll go out like a book festival, and I'll do, and you've done this, and you know, you do your presentation, and, you know, I get all the laughs, and then the guy that wrote the Holocaust book sells all the books. You know, this is what happens, you know, because they think, why do we have to buy this guy's book? He's already entertained us. And then you open it up to questions, and every question is about Dave, and because the guy doesn't go out, and the guy doesn't give it. So I'm the closest people are going to get. And I understand that. Look, he's a fascinating guy. He fascinates me. But I think we did some good work today, though.
Oh, I think so, too. And worst case scenario, as I said, what I would like, too, is I think if we have you on when the book comes out, not only will we do an excerpt, but let's do it like one of those cutesy couples answer machine messages. I will read a word, and then you'll read a word, and at the end, we'll just make a big beep sound. We'll do it for over a half an hour, and people will not be able to resist.
I'm going to say something to you, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way.
Oh, no, I'm sure I
won't. You need to move back to New York immediately.
No, we're cheery here. We're happy. Yes, I know, I know. Yeah, it is funny. We have a friend visiting this weekend from Syracuse, and she just left New York City too. So we've basically been sharing all these commiserating stories of talking to our friends that are still in New York, talking about our friends that are still in New York, and we're such smug jerks about it. We're like, oh, he'll never find an apartment at that price. As I relax into my fifth wing of my house that I haven't even been to.
Right.
Yet.
Sure.
I don't really.
Sure. Absolutely. Yet. Well, I mean, you know. You can't beat the physical plant of the United States outside of Manhattan. You can't beat it.
Man, but the sushi, there's no sushi here. It's horrible. There's no sushi here at all. The food, that's
a you gotta pretty much go down and catch your own.
Yeah.
If you want to do it, yeah, that's the move.
It's great. There's a Petland just down the street that I've been doing that pretty regularly at. They're just sitting there. They even give you a little net. It's so easy.
Save time.
It's so easy. All right, Bill, thanks a ton for coming on. This was really fun. I'm a little longer than I
My pleasure, and keep up all your good work, and I'm really was very flattered that you asked me, and we'll be in touch, and let me know when you're in town.
You got it, absolutely. So,
okay, pal.
Thanks,
take care.
So thank you to Bill Scheff. Please pre-order his book, Shrink Thyself, Shrink Thyself. I'm going to spell that for you. Please watch The Late Show with David Letterman because it is still great. And it's kind of amazing how great it is still. You might be able to tell my Letterman fanboyness from this podcast. Anyway, thank you to Bill Scheff. You can follow him on Twitter at Bill Scheff, BILLSCHEFT. This has been the Willie Experience podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes or like us on Facebook. To do all of those things. Definitely the iTunes thing. I don't know who Tuesday's guesser is, but it's going to be someone who can show. Have a great day, and I will talk to them and you. Bye.